That's Poncho Sanchez, whose mentor was the Afro-Cuban percussionist and conguero Mongo Santa Maria. That's with Conga Blue. It's from his 1999 album, Latin Soul. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Wednesday, December the 24th. And Mayor Theodore Hoskins of Berkeley, Missouri, just a few miles of Ferguson, is saying that the killing of an 18-year-old black man by a white police officer yesterday is not a repeat of the circumstances surrounding the killing of Michael Brown in nearby Ferguson last August. The man killed, identified by his mother as Antonio Martin, was armed, Hoskins says, and he was shot when he aimed a gun at officers attempting to question him about a burglary in the area. Following the shooting at about 11:15 last night, about 300 people descended on the gas station where the shooting occurred, and a violent confrontation with police ensued. Four people were arrested, and two police officers were injured, according to reports. Meanwhile, here in New York City, the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association's rancorous tirades against New York City and against New York City's Mayor William de Blasio crested after two police officers, Rafael Ramos and Wenjian Liu, were killed by Ismael Brinsley in an ambush shooting in the Bedford-Stuyvesant section of Brooklyn. There's blood on many hands tonight. That blood on the hands starts at City Hall in the office of the mayor, PBA President Pat Lynch, who heads the nation's largest police union, declared at a news conference after Ramos and Liu were confirmed dead. Tony Miranda, executive chairman of the National Latino Officers Association, says that Lynch, who is seeking re-election as PBA leader, is out of order to blame de Blasio for the deaths of Ramos and Liu and out of sync with the union's Latino membership. He joins us today. I'm delighted, Tony, that you could be with us today. I know yesterday you had your hands full, but we are delighted that you can be with us today. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, let's talk about that first, this notion that the mayor supposedly has blood on his hands, and this is the allegation by Pat Lynch of the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association. As an officer, you are a member of the Benevolent Association, although, of course, you head up the largest organization of Latino officers in law enforcement.
And I'm actually retired at this point. I'm a retired sergeant. So I wouldn't have belonged. When I didn't, was on the force, I did belong to the PBA as well. But we represent members who are both active and retired law enforcement officers. And the fact is that Pat Lynch's comments are what we call over the top. They're just rhetoric that's made to alarm not only officers, but it's appealing to officers' emotions. And I don't think that's the frame of mind that we want police to be in the street right now. We need to be police to be more professional, more cognizant of their surroundings, act accordingly. I think that's the best manner in which to send police officers out, not, pushing their emotions to the limit so that, it may cause an unnecessary accident or a confrontation, which is not what we're looking for at this time.
Well, of course, as a retired officer, you have a strong identification with the deaths of Rafael Ramos and Wenjian Liu. But also, with respect to Ramos, could you talk about what the impact is among Latino officers and what issues do come to mind in the aftermath of his death?
Well, first and foremost, the death of any police officer is an execution of any police officer. It's a very serious thing. And by no means anybody should think that this is acceptable behavior, or this is just a fallout of past issues like the Gardner case. This should have never have occurred. This strikes at the core of humanity. It strikes at the core of this public safety when you're able to do things like this. One misdeed doesn't qualify to have other misdeeds. The Gardner case, as we had said, we observed a chokehold. We spoke out against the police department in this regard, and that there should have been an indictment. So there are hardworking, good officers who are out there. And the same way we can't paint the public with one brush, the public shouldn't paint the police department with one brush and think that all police officers are against them. Pat Lynch's rhetoric tends to aid the separation between our community and law enforcement officers, and that's a dangerous thing that's happening.
But still, it is happening. So what are you doing about it?
Well, again, we speak to our officers regularly, and it's the strong message to say that we, despite the rhetoric of leadership, and we do not believe that he's representing the interests of the rank-and-file members, before the police officers were killed, to put out rhetoric about that we don't want the mayor or Melissa Margarito or city elected officials coming to the funerals, I think that was irresponsible. That's a decision that every family member has to make on an individual basis. And for them to do the things that they did when the mayor was at the hospital, paying his respects to the officer who was killed and his family, I think it was a great disrespect that they did to that officer and his family. It was unnecessary, and it wasn't the place for these things. We need to make sure that we're telling out minority officers and officers in general that we don't have to follow his rhetoric. What we need to do is keep the relationships that we've had going strong. The good officers understand that relationships are extremely important. No police department can function on its own, and no community can be safe on its own. So it's a combination that we must work together to make sure that we're safe.
Rafael Ramos was relatively new to the department. He was a safety officer, but relatively new as a police officer. Knowing what you know, and from your own personal experience within the police department, what kind of a future would he have had he lived?
Yeah, young on the job, the difference in today's police department and old times is an opportunity for advancement. Listen, we Latinos, and we have complained not only the mayor has been lacking in his effort for diversity in his administration, but the police department has been equally devastating to minority representation in these past 12 months. But we take on a career as law enforcement officers. He has the chance to become a sergeant or a detective. He had the chance to continue his education. His professional career was evolving. He was enthusiastic about what he was doing. He believed in serving the community. And then he was studying to be a pastor. So these are things that a combination that we would want in our law enforcement officers. This was a tremendous loss, not only to his family, but to the law enforcement community and the community that he was serving. There was a great opportunity here to, again, we're trying to recruit for the future to change and diversify the New York City Police Department. And he was that example. And so his loss is a tragedy on all kinds of levels.
Let's talk about your particular experience. What was the experience that you came through as a member of the New York Police Department, and what were the issues for you?
Again, I love being a police officer, servicing the community, doing the things that we needed to be a representative. I hated the discrimination internally that Hispanic officers and African-American officers have to suffer on a daily basis. We don't get the opportunities for advancements as we should. We're often targeted for discipline unfairly. When we settled a $26.8 million lawsuit based on the inequitable discipline that the police department was disciplining African-Americans and Hispanics more harshly than they were their white counterparts. And this is a reality. When you can dismiss the first deputy commissioner Pinheiro, chief of department Banks, Dr. Gonzalez, who was an assistant commissioner of training, people who all had the ability to lead the agency in the future, the direction that we were supposed to be going in, embracing our community, improving training, improving relations, and you can dismiss these individuals. It's not enough that the police commissioner turns around or the mayor says, well, we appointed another Hispanic or we appointed another African-American. It's the manner without cause in which you dismiss the most senior and influential members of the department that sends a chilling effect to all the other minorities to stay in line, never speak out, because you too can lose your job and lose your career just because they don't want to go in the same, just because they don't want you there. And that's a dangerous precedent that was set by Bratton and this administration.
In fact, I took a look at some numbers, and what was showing up was that of about 367 people within the department who hold the rank of deputy inspector or higher, 82% of them are white, 6.8% of them are African American, 10% Latino, and 1.4% Asian. How long has this dynamic existed within the department?
And those are the best numbers that the police department has ever had, considering. And those percentages do an injustice. What you're talking about is 8 Hispanics at that level. When you talk real numbers, then you get to see what the devastation is. And it's 360-something positions, and 8 are Hispanic. That tells you that there's no move to make us inclusive. Those are discretionary ranks, discretionary promotions. Bratton is very familiar with discretionary promotions because he was a sergeant and he became a commissioner. He didn't come up through the ranks, through all the rank and file. He came from a sergeant and they made him a chief in his agency. So he's well aware of looking at talent and bringing it up. That's why we have often cautioned him and said maybe he needs to broaden his circle and start looking for the Latino and African American talent that's inherited in the police department and not try to intimidate the current senior leaders and forcing them out of their jobs. There's a great level of internal discrimination, and when you fill those middle ranks with your whites, and they don't go anywhere for 20, 30, 40 years, it makes it impossible. There's no room for where African-Americans and Hispanics who are coming up through the ranks can get into those levels. So what we say is the same manner in which you dismiss Pinheiro, and the same manner in which you dismiss Banks, and the same manner in which you're dismissing Dr. Gonzalez, you need to start dismissing the inner structure that the police department at those levels. Let them have their retirements as well. Open up the rank structure so that we can have the diversity that reflects this great city of New York.
How far has your suggestion that you just gave us here, how far has that gone up the ranks and into City Hall? How deeply has that penetrated, that way of thinking?
Well, again, I think that City Hall has been lacking. You can't expect something different from the police commissioner if City Hall has been lacking in its Latino representation. They're doing hand-in-hand the same thing as happening here. When you look at, again, every time we do a press statement, they always say, well, you have this Hispanic and that Hispanic. And I say, that's the challenge, that you can name out of the hundreds and thousands of positions that are available in the city of New York, you can name the Latinos on one hand. And I said, I challenge people, can you name all the white people that were reappointed or the new appointments that they made? And then they look at you like you're strange. Well, if you can name the Hispanics in one hand and the African Americans in the other hand, then why can't you name the whites in the same fashion? And the reason that it's challenging, again, it's pretty obvious when there's a lack of inclusiveness. And this administration and his campaign screams of two cities and two different cities that were, he was supposed to address the diversity issue. He was going to bring everybody together, and they've been slow, if not purposefully lacking in those type of appointments.
Well, that brings me back to the PBA. This is one of the things that the PBA should be pressing for as the union representing the membership. What is the PBA doing about this?
The PBA historically has not taken on issues of discrimination. And they don't feel it is their job or responsibility. And thus, that's why you have organizations like ours that are out there defending the rights of both Hispanic and African American members of the law enforcement community. Because the PBA has traditionally not invested in defending these officers against allegations of discrimination when there's overwhelming evidence of what goes on. And remember, the PBA is also, often we have cases of allegations of discrimination that are based on officers doing things to other officers. So then the PBA chooses to defend the white officer as opposed to defending the minority officer. And this is an historical challenge with the structure of the PBA. And again, officers don't have a choice when they join the police department. It's because they're the bargaining agent, officers are automatically included in that union. But they're not representative, and they don't necessarily represent the interests of both Hispanics or African Americans. And you've seen that with a number of articles where officers have continued, and women have continued to suffer the discrimination, and the police department and its structure is just looking to limit the liability and limit the possibility of their members getting hurt, and as opposed to actually defending the causes and defending the officers who were wronged.
When you say that officers are doing things to other officers, would that include, I know I covered a couple of cases involving shootings and involving killings. of African-American and Latino officers by white officers, and nothing came of them. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, again, that's the most extreme case. We've had extreme cases where minority officers in civilian clothes were shot at, or if not killed, by their law enforcement counterparts. And in one command, the officer was shot by his own members of his own command, which is very challenging, and that's when he's in plain clothes. So when we're out of uniform, we're just seen as another African-American or Hispanic, and the approach is as such. And it's the same attitude that our community suffers is how they approach us when we're not wearing our uniform. And those are the extreme cases that get that media attention. But you don't hear about the fights in the locker rooms, or the nooses and the bones that are being hung on people's lockers, or calling African-Americans Negroes and niggers, and calling Hispanics spicks. And you don't hear about the daily abuse that Hispanic women suffer at the hands of their supervisors. And again, you don't, even the case when they try to force Hispanics to say that we could speak Spanish in the police department, that, you know, it was against the rules, and they started disciplining officers. And this police commissioner has chosen to say, I won't enforce the policy, but he hasn't written a policy declaring that it should never be an issue for discipline. So he leaves the door open for the next administration that if they choose to, they can come in and say, yeah, well, we're going to enforce this rule, and we're going to discipline you for speaking Spanish.
This is Bill Bratton's second term, really, as police commissioner. Was that a wise decision to bring him in for another term, or should he actually be gone?
Again, he's here. The decision to stay or leave is going to be his decision at this point. When they were first vetting him, we had obviously not supported him. We were supporting the appointment of either First Deputy Commissioner Pinheiro or Chief Banks. Those were our support. It was time to have a minority leadership in the New York City Police Department, perhaps the time to have the first Hispanic in history become the police commissioner. But we didn't see that with this administration. He reached back, and as you can see, the continued appointments of Bratton seem to be people of old who have been kicked out by other administrations or kicked out by other agencies that he's now bringing back and re-empowering people. Again, I spoke about this. We got an email about the fact that this police commissioner is privatizing the New York City Police Department. And I say that because he now has private consulting contracts that are above any review by any outside agency. The city council doesn't have review. I don't know of anybody that has review. And there's no bidding process. And he appoints these, you know, million-dollar contracts, or hundreds if not thousands of dollars in the contracts, to consultants that come in and overrun the New York City Police Department. They determine who gets promoted. They determine who's getting the special assignments. They determine the policy and direction of the New York City Police Department. But they're not... They weren't elected by our people. They're not even known by our communities. But again, there are at least six consultants, all happen to be white, who have that kind of power in the New York City Police Department.
I want to ask you about the chokehold death in Staten Island, and the officer, the specific officer involved, and that is Pantaleo. He's been going through, I'm told, a departmental hearing. And there's something very troubling about this, and I wondered whether you could explain it to us. All right. The officer, Pantaleo, and he's not the only one who should have come under serious scrutiny here and with a mind toward charges. But, of course, we know how the grand jury process was handled that did not deliver any indictments in that case. But... does Pantaleo get a departmental hearing? He's supposedly interviewed. We don't know what is being said, but we do know that the commissioner, in effect, is going to be the final arbiter of what was right and what was wrong. As a former police officer, a former sergeant, what do you think about this process? What do you think about this case and how it's being handled, not only by the prosecution, but I'm speaking specifically with respect to the department itself?
Okay. Well, with respect to the prosecution, if you overcharge a grand jury, then there's no way they come back with an indictment. If you charge a grand jury in the same manner that you charge every other black or Hispanic that's ever been arrested before, where you have a multitude of charges from the most serious to the weakest possibility, and you charge the entire thing, then you get an indictment 100% of the time. But when you have the situations where you overcharge somebody, then you leave the opportunity that a grand jury cannot bring down an indictment. Now, as far as the police department's ability to have this trial, again, they shouldn't have offered the officers immunity. We know, in fact, that I believe that this officer should have been indicted, if not other officers, especially if there was a supervisor on the scene there that had direct responsibility over the actions that were taken. And it's a matter of presentation of information. Now, we saw in the video that Officer Pantaleo attempted to use the hold, the chokehold in which he is trained to do, which is to reach under the arm. And then, because Eric Garner was so big, he wasn't able to grip his hands together, and therefore then he resulted to the chokehold. And then, having so many officers in the scene, that should not have been the alternative. And the fact of the matter is, again, it's trying to look at things after the fact or after it happened. But prior to Eric Garner being put on the ground, did he in fact violate the law? Did he in fact commit a crime? And every indication is that, A, no matter how many times they say he was alleged to have been selling cigarettes, he did not sell cigarettes. He was not in the act of selling cigarettes, nor did the police officers have sufficient evidence to charge him with selling cigarettes. That's reality. That's the first point. For having that fact, then they probably should have never approached him to begin with. Having approached him and having the fact that he was contained, he did not resist or attempt to run away, they had ample opportunity to get use of non-lethal devices that are available to law enforcement, that the supervisors should have had. And if the supervisors didn't have it, they could have called emergency service over. Here's an individual, 6'3", 300-something pounds. We need to place him under arrest. There were other methods to utilize as opposed to having to jump him and physically assault him. And then thirdly, there was no interaction that we saw in video where a supervisor, a person of authority, engaged him in conversation. 99% of the time when the supervisor intervenes and talks to an individual facing a possibility of arrest, they would say, okay, Sergeant, I'm going to go along with this and we can straighten it out in the precinct. All it was a conversation. Somebody with authority would come up and say, listen, we're going to arrest you. We think we have enough. We can come into the precinct and talk about this. Remember, Garner had never resisted arrest before. He was fed up. So now we have another issue. Garner also made allegations in his two prior arrests, then legal aid was representing him, when he had indicated that these officers were targeting him, that he was not in fact selling cigarettes any longer, and that the officers were just randomly going to pick him up because of his past history. Having that be the predecessor to the officers going after him this time, why isn't there an investigation to ascertain whether this was a retaliation because he had filed a complaint against the officer in the prior arrest?
Well, we also have the fact that Pantaleo himself was sued 4 different times for wrongful arrest.
There are a number of lawsuits that the police department, again, does not follow through with, where officers are found, even in court, where their judges determine that their testimony is less than credible. These are situations where after hearing a fact and being cross-examined, when you challenge officers on what they present as evidence and you find them to be lying, then they should be held accountable. This is the process. We want to have good police officers. We want to have the confidence of the community. But you want to have a system that holds bad police officers accountable for their actions. And that balance is what we're lacking. And that's why you have the outcry that you have right now. Because it wasn't just the Garner case. The Garner case kind of pushed it over because there was a video. Had there not been a video, we would not have had the response that we have because they would have just said he was selling cigarettes. But they didn't have that evidence. He resisted arrest. They didn't have that evidence. He said, I'm not going with you. Again, but he had no time to put his hands up. And when you look at it, look at what happened on that video. Any human being, whether you're 6'3 or 2'5", if somebody's trying to knock you off balance and pull you backwards, human instinct is to get your balance back. And that's what Garner did. Human instinct took over. I'm going to get my balance back because you try to throw me back. And then you had a guy who was 5-something trying to pull down a guy 6-something. That's called bad police tactics. And poor tactics cannot be an excuse for causing the death of somebody.
I played yesterday a news briefing. This was the second one that I shared with the audience, in which Bratton, a chief of detectives Boyce, and the Brooklyn chief of detectives Connery were basically briefing the media about what they have, updating them on what they've learned in this the double homicide in Brooklyn. What was interesting was that they outlined and went at, I mean, they repeated it many times, that they were able to ascertain that the young man involved, Brinsley, was had a long history of mental, what seemed to be to them, and they confirmed it, that he was basically mentally, he had mental issues, and that he had had a long and troubled past. But they emphasized and they confirmed from their own investigation, it seemed as if he had had a long history of mental illness. And at the same time, they said, but he expressed anti-government sentiments and he expressed hatred of the police. Now, is it more that his expression of anti-government sentiments and hatred of the police, does that warrant more of a focus than his mental condition, or do you see, is this a case of a mentally ill person, or is this doing something really horrendous and violent, including shooting, and I suppose with the intent of killing his girlfriend, she survived, and then taking his own life? These things would suggest that there were problems with this young man. So why is it being forecast and broadcast as if he was just genetically coded to be a bad guy, and we should have absolutely, we should see this purely as a purely evil man doing a really horrendous and evil thing?
I don't have an answer for that, and I can't begin to justify this individual's mental state. When you have an execution of anybody, it should not be acceptable conduct or justifiable conduct. And when you have an execution of police officers who represent supposedly law and order and the balance in our society, you cannot find that to be acceptable under any circumstances. There's no excuse for it. And again, the conflicting information is that if you say somebody had a mental history, then why were you arresting him so much? Then he should have been getting mental help as opposed to being arrested all the time. He wouldn't have had such an arrest history. And then there's going to be a number of other factors. You know, did these demonstrations and did the rhetoric that goes out there take somebody who's less than mentally capable, and did he find validity in these claims and then decide, I want to take action? And that's the challenge that we have when protesters or our leaders of protests turn out and use rhetoric that is inappropriate. When we had a demonstration, and most of the demonstrations by more means were peaceful, and here in New York anyway. And then you had that New York demonstration where now everybody wants to say it may have been phony, it could have been staged, there was only a few people. There were quite a number of people out there who were yelling for the death of police officers. When that happened, the police department should have stopped that march. It should not have allowed that type of march to go through the city of New York. You can't say those things. And then, you know, most of the leaders would say, well, I never really meant that we should kill officers. Maybe you didn't. But there are people that are out there hearing this, and maybe they believe what you're saying, and they decide they want to take it that next step further. So are you responsible for what you say? Be careful of what the things that we espouse. You know, and then there are other people that say, all police officers are enemies. That's not the reality of the situation. Police officers are your sons and daughters. They have mothers, and they have brothers, and they have family members in our communities. We live in these communities. So to say that we're all the enemy is irresponsible, and it's reckless. So they have to have balance in our presentation. And while we as officers and people of color who live in the community say that the death of Garner was a wrong thing, should never have happened, you cannot then go say we're going to crucify all police officers when some of us are officers.
Strong point. So here we are, and what we're getting from you today is a really complex issue. Among the people who are our guardians are people, of course, who are us, and who themselves have a major fight on their hands internally within the department. So how do we reconcile these two things, Tony?
As a community or as officers?
Both.
As a community, we are both. We're officers and we live in our communities. And we have to strike for a balance. We have to push for the change that's necessary to create accountability, and balance in the presentation. These are the things that we want. But in fighting for that, it doesn't justify us committing more crimes. There's no justification in doing those type of things. If you're out there protesting, you have to have some level of belief that you can cause change to happen. You can have some level of belief that the system will respond to you. Let it be told that this system sometimes doesn't respond to us blacks and Hispanics in so easily, but that doesn't mean that we're going to need to stop pushing. When, again, even these demonstrations, when these demonstrators decided that they wanted to continue protest in the midst of the burial of these two officers, it did a disservice to the cause. Because instead of bringing more people to the cause, other people would have said, you know what, they did the right thing, I want to keep supporting that issue. Now they took people who were their supporters and pushed them aside. They said, these guys don't have balance. Middle America, us, hardworking, poor, black and Hispanics, and middle Americans, working families, want to have balance. They want to see that balance. We're not out there supporting the killing of all police officers, nor are we out there supporting the killing of our community or the abuse of our community. So there's balance that we seek. We need to hold our elected officials accountable. We need to exercise our right to vote, which we don't generally do. And we need to keep pushing the agenda. And we cannot fall asleep on this issue. It's a tragedy that these officers were executed. Doesn't mean that we still can't have accountability and change as to issues that are happening to our African-American Hispanic kids every day. But to take a couple of days off, I don't think it would hurt our cause any bit. I think it hurt our cause in terms of getting unilateral support from people by pushing it that we need to do it during the burial of these two officers by disrespecting this process that everybody believes in.
What is owed to Rafael Ramos and Wenjian Liu? What is owed to them?
What's owed to them, they can't never get back, is their life. What's owed to them is the future that they had with their families, a new marriage, their children, the relationships, the service that they could have given to our communities. We can't give that back. But this police commissioner does have the opportunity to promote them posthumously as historically has been done. Let's do right by their families. Let's support their families and show that this was not something that anybody condones in any form. The Gardner family came out and supported these officers. This is not what they were looking for. This is not the response to the change that they were asking for. Well, and again, by this action, do a disservice to Gardner's death as well as to the officer's death. We don't need that combination. Police commissioner and the mayor can promote these officers posthumously. They can make it possible that the family still gets support in the future. They owe that. The people of New York owe them that much, and we owe them the respect to bury them with respect and allow their families the time of mourning, other than to have force officers out in the street for demonstrations that lose their purpose during this particular time.
Tony, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I know you have your hands full with the situation that is unfolding, but all the more I appreciate the fact that you took time to be with us today and to share your thoughts.
I appreciate the invitation, and we look forward to doing it again with you anytime. And we just pray that somehow there's some comfort to the officers' families, and maybe that we take this time logically and as people of the city of New York, officers and community people, time to reflect and figure out how we can make this work together, make the changes, and bring our communities together, because we can't afford a separation, and we cannot afford other officers to be killed, and we cannot afford another black or Hispanic to be killed by a law enforcement officer unnecessarily.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts about things right after this. You're listening to PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Yatrice Lead, and now it's time for your thoughts. You know, yesterday we began that exercise of disassembling the news conference and how we are conditioned to hear what they want us to hear and to to glam on to the things that they want us to just put in the forefront of our minds, to condition us into thinking the way they would like us to think. And so we did a very good job of decoding that news conference. Today, we can be a little bit more editorial and stretch out a bit more. 888-874-4888. Let's hear how you think, what you think of the events. It's really troubling, the unfolding situation now in a town not too far from Ferguson, Missouri, and what's happening there. And people are watching that very, very carefully. So there's so much. And of course, we know that last night, the protests did continue in defiance of the plea by Mayor de Blasio to suspend protests until the funerals of the two police officers are over with. They disrupted traffic very peacefully, but disrupted traffic and holiday shopping between 59th and 53rd streets along Fifth Avenue, still demanding criminal prosecutions of police officers involved in the August 9th killing of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, and the July 17th chokehold death of Eric Garner in Staten Island, New York. Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Matt from New York, you start off. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon and season's greetings. Happy Saturnalia to the beloved family.
Thank you.
This situation is just really something, and there's a young man, sounds like a very bright brother, who I heard on NPR, which I very seldom hear, and on another program, who has an organization called New Yorkers Against Bratton. And are you familiar with him, Utrice?
No.
Okay, because that's something that I hope that you will look into and bring him on, because that was particularly enlightening. And give us Tony's full name after I hang up and can note it, about the firing of not only what happened with the Philip Banks, the African descendant high level deputy chief, but also Pinero and Dr. Gonzalez. That's a very important aspect, because we know that de Blasio had all these promises and he seems to have no vision. The other point I want to make is what I tuned in at 121 yesterday, so I didn't dare try to call, but I think I was on the right track in that I was very struck that this would seem to be someone who would be in the category, talking about Brinsley, of someone who was definitely mentally ill. Several attempted suicides. He shot his other girlfriend in July of last year. So, but that sort of put aside. The other aspect of it is we really have to look at, I was listening to Joyce Rowley, who's usually
We need you to kind of, if you can do
okay,
it, we have a lot of people.
The point
so if
is,
you can
is
wrap it
we
up.
Need to look and see how much of this is engineered also, because it's 2 hours that they're focusing on and that they see everything, they surveil us completely. That's an important point that we need to, you know, the Instagram posts, whether they were real. And thank you.
Thank you so much. From Queens, James, you're on the air. Hello, James?
Sad that...
Hello?
Hello, I'm here?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, I am very much disgusted with the mayor and his policy. Because number one, if he's the mayor, the city of New York, that's been voted by the people, he's supposed to be in charge of the police commissioner. Not the commissioner telling the mayor what to do. And I feel that what's going on is that this is a very bad example of leadership. If you're a mayor of the city of New York and you're supposed to be in charge of all these agencies, then your rule is to, is to be put into a population. If there's a problem and the commissioner can't deal with it, you get rid of him and put a new person in. But I feel that there's too much politics going on, and it's going to cause his platform to collapse, because when he got in office, his thing about stop and frisk. The issue is we have a police department that is fully racist to the point. And it goes back to even 5 or 7 mayors that they have not cleaned up the police department and get rid of the bad apples that are polluting the good ones. And this sets a very bad example to the public, because now you say, well, these people are supposed to be protecting us. We're paying their salaries from our taxes, and all we're getting is problems. And then we have a broken-down judicial system that is not really doing a job that it's supposed to be. So, I mean, the public now has to come to a point and say, enough is enough. We're going to have to vote this day out or get a new, have a new election.
Thank you, James, for your opinion today. Thanks for your call. From New York, Ali, you're on the air.
Hi, Idris. That I disagree with some of the points that that gentleman that you had on, the officer Tony, or former officer, I'm not sure. First of all, he talks about, he was saying, like, this gentleman, these two cops, they were killed because people probably in other states and even in New York, they were calling for to kill cops. The fact of the matter is that those cops, they were killed for what this police department, they have been doing to brown and black people. It has to be very clear. And this, and I, for his voice, he sounds like he's an African-American man, I believe. That point has to be clear. These people, they were killed for what it has been done around this nation to black and brown people. Another point that I wanted to make, and they're talking about...
Wait a minute. Okay, let me just ask you there. The point he was making was that one of the things that people have to consider is the impact of their words. And he was talking about in the marches, several people were saying, what do we want dead cops? When do we want them now? He says that there needs to be a responsibility there in terms of the marchers to not put things out there that could or could not. You don't know. We don't know what the motivation was. There's only conjecture. The person that could answer the question is dead. So his point was that there needs to be some degree of responsibility on the part of people doing these protests to watch what they say.
But then there has to be a responsibility in the police department around this nation about killing brown and black people. Maybe.
But he agrees with that. He says that's what he said. What I want to say to you, Ali, is the one doesn't cancel out the other. They're not mutually exclusive in that way. People do need to watch what they say. It's a very simple. You could be very, very vociferous. But when you say, if people are saying, what do we want dead cops? When do we want them now? Come on now. That's really not a responsible way to protest.
I have been in a lot of the marches in New York City. I haven't really heard that from one that I have participated. But the second point that I need to make here is that he wants us to stop. And I'm going to tell you, last night I was in that march that started right in front of the Plaza Hotel. I was in that march. They want us to stop these marches. The fact of the matter is that when Ramali, and the reason that I'm pointing this, because this is one thing that Ramali's mom had always emphasized. When she had gone to the court, you have the cops going into court, and they are laughing. Carry on like it's a big party inside the court room. Mm-hmm. So you're he's saying that we have to show respect. Yes, we condemn the killing of these two innocent police officers, but he has to look at what these cops, when they go, including black and brown cops, they go to this courtroom and they act like it's a field trip. This is something that I have seen myself when we're marching and things happen. These cops, they act like a field trip, like it's a big party. This is something that Ramali moms have been talking about all the time. They also even drive through her window.
About Ramali, without referring to who he is, was Ramali Graham was a young man who was killed in the Bronx by police officers.
Inside his bathroom.
Chased him into his home and shot him there in the bathroom.
And you know, when we hear a mother talking about what these cops are doing, you know, some of us don't feel like we wanted to respond. Yes, we do condemn this thing, but if we stopped around now, you know, it will die down. And another thing, he also said that, oh, some people, you turning off on people. Yes, but I'm going to tell you, I belong to one group that we call an emergency meeting on Monday, and besides the member, 30 people, new people show up. People are looking to join group to fight what is being done in this city, even after the killing of these two cops. I just wanted to make those points. Thank you.
You made very good and very strong points. Thank you very much, Ali, for your call. From Mount Vernon, Jason, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Jason, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I applaud the last caller for making those comments. She's totally accurate in the way that the police officers behave in court and their callous way of dealing with the court and criminal justice system and their conduct. A few points. Mr. Antonio in Missouri, being shot yesterday in Missouri, not too far from Ferguson. Please hear me out. There is misaccuracies about the reporting. There was no gun on him. I want to repeat this to your audience. There was no gun found on the scene. 2 hours, his body was still on the ground, not being removed. He did not get any medical attendance in half hour after he was shot. He was with a friend around the corner smoking a cigarette. I have friends who are on Tumblr and on Twitter who exposed this. There are media outlets locally who exposed this, that he had no gun. The gun was planted. The pictures are there on the website. So please, when you get information, you probably have a collateral source to properly fact-check these things.
Here's the thing. It is an unfolding issue, and this is why I very seldom like to report on unfolding issues, because the facts are quite fluid. I did attribute the facts to what was said by the mayor. So it was not my independent report at all. I'm saying this is what the mayor said. And of course, we will have to follow up the story. But we don't know yet what is factual yet. We do know there's a lot of stuff floating around, and it's the nature of these kinds of things. It will take a while before we know what the actual facts are.
That's very appropriate to say now. However, it would have been appropriate to say then, because there's the case of this mentally ill person who apparently came from the Baltimore area to shoot these two police officers in the car, are still, in several people's point of view, an unfolding story. How can you have, now I'm switching cases now, this is the case where the two officers were shot in New York. How can you have an individual mentally disturbed who turned a gun on his girlfriend and then was persuaded not to kill his girlfriend, and then he did kill her? And then he attempted to kill himself. And then he turned a gun on his girlfriend. He took a bus or some type of transportation, a means of conveyance from Baltimore, which is a 4-hour ride. From New York City to D.C. is 5 hours, 4.5 hours. To Baltimore is 3.5, 4 hours. He successfully took a bus, then composed himself and went to some place for a mysterious amount of time, which is not true or hasn't been confirmed, and then went about his merry way to shoot two officers. Neither of them are the profile of the police officers who are routinely, I want to repeat this, neither of the two police officers are the profile of the police officers who routinely shoot brown, Latino, and black men. They were not Italianos. They were not Irish. They were not those customarily officers like the Michael Olivers who shot Sean Bell.
But what is the point you're making?
The point is clear. There's no way in the world someone from Baltimore in that area can take a bus and travel to New York, based on their timeline, and shoot two police officers.
All right, we'll have to leave it right there. What I want to let you know, and everybody else, is, of course, we will proceed on Friday with our usual Free Your Mind Friday, where the extension of time would allow a fuller discussion of the points that you're making today. But thank you for your call today. From Brooklyn, Keisha, you're on the air. Keisha's not on the air. We have Paz from Brooklyn. Are you on the air? Okay, he's not with us. Paz is not there. Charles from New York, you're on the air.
Thanks a lot for presenting the type of information that you give on your show.
Thank you.
I listened to Brother Randa, and the only thing that I like his points. He made some very good points, but I feel that it was no reason, or it could have been a reason in their eyes to not have the particular marches that they had after these officers were shot. But my thing is, the city can't stop because Lynch or de Blasio say so. These people had these marches planned, and they went about their way. You understand? We mm-hmm. all respect mm-hmm. the fact that these officers was killed. That's a given. You know, you don't want to see nobody get hurt, but you can't stop what you're doing as everyday people because of that.
That's I agree with that.
No, that's
Thank
my
you,
point.
Charles. Thank you so much, Charles, for your call. And Ed from Philly, you'll be the last, but you'll have to move a little fast to make your point before we close the program.
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
I wanted to add on to the lesson from yesterday's program in decoding the police news conference. They presented it in they described it in a linear manner, and mm-hmm. what I drew from it was it was an attempt to limit the extent of black anger, as if we are not entitled to be outraged at all of these crimes that are committed against us without no accountability. I don't support the killing of the officers or any actions like that, but there is a rather tempered and measured anger that is raging at all of these atrocities in our community, and that it needs to be addressed.
Well, thank you very much, Ed, for that. I agree with you. I agree with that position. Thank you so much for your call today.
Thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. We will have greater time with each other on Friday, tomorrow being a day off. So you will hear a re-airing of a program, a Lead Stories program. And for those of you who celebrate Christmas, I wish you the best, and we will come back. And those of you who celebrate the season, I wish you the best. And we will come back to each other on Friday, God willing, and the creek don't rise, as they say. And we will have all of Friday to pursue these discussions. These are very important developments, and we need to spend some time deconstructing them. What are they supposed to mean to us? And how do they inform our actions now and in the future? So these are very, very important questions to discuss. And all opinions matter. All opinions have validity, and all opinions should be in play. We should feed off of each other. This is not about where you must agree or you have to disagree or whatever it is. The idea is to flesh things out and put ideas out so that people can take a look at them. If they make sense, they'll incorporate them in their reservoir of information. If not, they just throw them out. But this program is to facilitate a discussion, sincere and honest discussion. And so I'm delighted that people take advantage of the opportunity to present their thoughts. So it does us a great deal, it's a great compliment to not just me as the host of the program, but to everyone participating in the program. So I thank you very much for the honesty of your opinions and for the braveness of presenting them in an open forum. It's a rare, rare thing, and I really enjoy the fact that you feel safe enough and comfortable enough in expressing your thoughts that way, because they are respected here. Stay tuned. Keep it right here at PRN.FM, and we will see each other again on Friday. We will continue the discussion. It won't end anytime soon from the way things look. Take care, and again, have a merry, happy, if you do the merry, happy thing. For me, it's usually lentil soup. See you Friday.